Britain and Japan, two nations once defined by order and cultural continuity, are now unraveling under the same globalist forces of mass demographic change.
Police emergency.
Yeah, we've just been attacked by someone racially.
In Britain, years of anti-racism indoctrination have crippled policing, producing a two-tier justice system.
Your officers assisted in that man's death.
That protects minority feelings over public safety.
In fact, Henry told officers that he could not breathe 9 times. He told them he had been stabbed 4 times. The response from one officer was, "I don't think you have, mate."
He was actually treated in a way that meant an accusation of a racial slur was treated more seriously than an act of murder. What does he say? "I can't breathe." Familiar words? Remember career criminal George Floyd, who died in appalling circumstances in Midwest America a few years ago. Remember the reaction to that and the way the police behaved. Within a few days, Keir Starmer was taking the knee. Black Lives Matter exploded all over the country. Churchill's statue was defaced. The cenotaph was vandalised. And yet, what has the public reaction been from our leaders and politicians? And indeed, to be frank, much of the media to this. Silence. Absolute silence. Proof, if ever there was any, that we're living in a two-tier culture in this country where the rights and privileges of white people matter less than those of ethnic minorities.
When we have police cars with pride flags on it, which is a politicised movement, we know that the police, who are supposed to be impartial, are often anything but. They are driven by an ideology, a Marxist, cultural Marxist ideology, that is not right, that is not good, and it's against you, and we're seeing two-tier policing, we're seeing two-tier justice, two-tier politics, and the people of Britain have had enough of it.
The outrage has exploded as Nigel Farage, Parliament, and even John Cleese expose how religious exemptions shield violence while native citizens face the consequences.
But no matter the pain we feel, there is no justification for more violence and disorder. Yeah. The attacks directed towards police officers in Southampton last night were disgraceful and completely unacceptable. Yeah. This is a time for serious work, not rage. Yeah. And let me be clear, we will ensure anyone found engaging in disorder meets the full force of the law, as we have done before.
Under the Criminal Justice Act 1988 and Offensive Weapons Act 2019, carrying a bladed weapon in public carries up to 4 years in prison for ordinary Brits, yet Sikhs receive a statutory religious defense for the kirpan, allowing public carry even as prosecutors admitted Digwa chose a larger 21-centimeter blade beyond his compliant neck kirpan. France, Denmark, Sweden, Italy, and the UAE have banned public kirpan carry outright with Sikh compliance. But UK authorities cling to the exemption, effectively arming one group while disarming the native people with no way to defend themselves. Further east, Japan, long a holdout against this chaos through post-war restrictions and the 1952 Immigration Control Act, now faces its own opening salvo. 10 ancient temples and shrines, including one from 807 AD and a World Heritage Site, have been torched in the first 5 months of 2026 alone, despite automation over cheap labor and strong public opposition to large-scale immigration. Japan's quiet visa expansions and cultural arson signal the same globalist pressure hell-bent on eroding identity. Britain surrendered to the script and got two-tier chaos. Japan resisted and still watches its soul set ablaze. Proof that dilution of a people's history, safety, and cohesion is not progress. It's engineered collapse. John Bowne reporting for the Alex Jones Network at alexjoneslive.com.
Now in the 21st century, it's time to stand up and realize that we should not allow ourselves to be crammed into this rat maze. We should not submit to dehumanization. The 21st century is going to be a new century. Not the century of slavery. Not the century of lies and truth without significance and classism and statism and all the rest of the modes of control. It's going to be the age of humankind standing up for something pure and something right.
I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man.
I want freedom! That's what I want! And that's what you should want!
You're listening to Alex Jones.
The truth is out there in front of you, but they lay out this buffet of lies. I'm sick of it, and I'm not going to take a bite out of it!
AlexJonesLive.com. Tomorrow's news today.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Wednesday, the 3rd of June, 2026. We got a lot of stories to cover today. Just so many videos, it's going to be impossible to get to all of them. But I got a lot of them because we got to do a little compare and contrast. Not only do I have to show you things like the statements from British authorities about the death of Henry Novak and the ensuing outrage about it, but we also got to go back in time and compare those videos to what they were saying during the Southport riots or during the terror attack a month ago in Golders Green, which wasn't actually a terror attack, or during the George Floyd riots, because I know it's not exactly, you know, breaking news. This isn't something you don't know already. But yeah, the two-tier thing is unavoidable. And the outrage is perfectly understandable. And we're going to get very much into what's going on in the UK with Henry Novak. We'll actually be joined, the death of Henry Novak, that is. We'll be joined by Jack Hadfield, who a lot of the footage that you're seeing from the riots yesterday were captured by him. He's going to come on and give us his sort of first-person view of what's going on. And I'm going to put the question to him, how is this going to be different? Because we saw the Southport riots. We saw the outrage, the once again very justifiable fury from the English people who saw, in that case, their little girls murdered by the state, essentially, by one of the state's little agents that had been brought over. And at the time, it was like, okay, either this protest series snowballs into like actually overthrowing the government. That's sort of one option. And then the only other option is they fizzle out, they get shut down, the leaders get arrested, and everybody involved gets systematically rounded up. And that's essentially what happened after the Southport riots. And I wonder what's going to be different about this one, because it's not like the people in power don't know what the people of the UK want. It's not like the protests are over some impossible ask. They want basic safety. They want to be treated like first-class citizens in their homeland. It's not that complicated, but the power structure steadfastly refuses to budge an inch. And you really can't come to any conclusion other than it's on purpose and they want to destroy the United Kingdom. And I really don't know what other conclusion you could come to looking at the way all of this has been handled. But we also have a lot of other stuff to talk about. We've got a lot of political nonsense to get into. Big hearings today on Capitol Hill with Scott Bessent and Marco Rubio. Todd Blanch was up there yesterday. And there's somebody else, Mark Wayne Mullen, also being grilled today. And there's some interesting and fiery backs and forths on Capitol Hill today. We'll show you those videos. I'm also going to be getting into what the hell the Kushners are doing in Albania, of all places. And I went down a little bit of a rabbit hole on this one. And we'll get into that because it has been revealed now that Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump basically trying to purchase an island in Albania off the Albanian coast. And the Albanians are not very happy with it. And now the funds for the construction have been frozen because of a corruption investigation into Jared Kushner and his business partner. But it turns out this is a very long time coming. And again, I'll explain the rabbit hole that I went down to get to my conclusions as to what exactly is going on in Albania. But I guess we will begin with Henry Nowak, since we'll be joined very shortly this hour by Jack Hadfield. And we've got some interesting back and forths going on. And you know what? I don't have numbers on these, so I'm not sure if we'll be able to go to these so quickly. But this is from Paul Weston at P. Westoff on X. Starmer's response is very dangerous. I'm getting message after message from normally placid people stating the only way Britain can be saved is by violent insurrection and the execution of traitors. And yeah, it's heating up, folks. The parliament is getting a little hot, and Nigel Farage is helping to lead the charge, but he's really abandoned his post to Rupert Lowe. What really they should be combining forces. The problem is reform is controlled opposition is what you call it. But let's go to this video. 3 minutes long from Lee Harris, Paul Weston retweeted. This is as part of the question time in the parliamentary system where they get to put questions to the prime minister. And here's Farage lodging his complaints. Let's watch.
Nigel Farage. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Following the horrendous circumstances of Henry Nowak's death, can I urge the Prime Minister to consider this? It is now clear to growing millions in this country that we're living under two-tier policing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The instructions that are given to police officers from police bosses are clear and written down in ink. It says you must treat different ethnic groups in different ways. That, apart from the upset and the anger at the circumstances of his death, the anger that you saw spilling out in Southampton last night, which is in danger of getting considerably worse, if the public lose trust in being treated fairly by the police, can he take some action, end this divisive practice of two-tier policing, and make sure that all British citizens are treated the same?
Mr. Speaker, I don't believe there's two-tier policing in this country. I'm really shocked that he pretends to have respect for Henry's family and then acts in this way. They are a grieving family.
Mr. Brash, please, it's a very important question. I want to hear the Prime Minister. If you want to carry on, go outside, please, Prime Minister.
Grieving family have asked us not to respond in the way that the leader of reform has responded. They've asked us not to. They have lost their son in the most appalling circumstances. They make a simple plea of us as human beings to please not exploit that. That is their plea to us. We all need to reflect on those words of Henry's father. My response, and the response of others, to be fair, has been focused on the lessons to be learned so we can deliver justice. His response has been to appeal for rage. Rage. That's his response to a father who's lost his son and asked for that not to happen. Exploiting this tragedy to create grievance and division would be wrong in any circumstances, but to do it when the family are expressly saying, please don't, is unforgivable. It shows exactly who he is.
Excuse me. So, again, you know, it's like, what do I even have to say? What do I even have to say? The outrage from Keir Starmer is performative. The only thing they have to hang their hat on, the only claim they can even make at this point, is you're disrespecting the family's request. Basically, that the family came out and said, please don't, you know, make this a big political thing. Here's the problem, though. One, again, the family can say what they want. We're concerned about our children. We're concerned about our future. We don't want to be that father into the future. This concerns everybody. And yes, even people here in America, because, again, the attack on the UK is a universal and ubiquitous attack on every Western nation. But specifically for the people of the UK, they have a vested interest in making sure that the problems that caused this are fixed. And if the, you know, parents don't want it to be a source of outrage and division, well, it is. So I don't know what else to tell you about that. Of course, all of this is just completely and utterly and totally inverted. And all of the people now, so concerned about not politicizing violence themselves, all to a man politicized violence that had absolutely nothing to do with their country, even let alone, you know, particular aspects of their political reality. And of course, I've got all the records. Oh, we'll go through all of them today. And you don't have to wonder. You don't have to take my word for it. I've got all of it laid out here. For one thing, let's look at the way the protests yesterday were covered. BBC News UK, same account here. When George Floyd riots racked London, causing massive destruction sort of across the board, tearing down statues and, you know, destroying things, hurting people. It says 27 police officers injured during largely peaceful anti-racism protest in London. No, they were just injured. You know, right? This is the passive voice. 27 police officers got themselves injured during the largely peaceful anti-racism protest in London. Meanwhile, police pelted with missiles at Henry Nowak protest. Okay, so when 27 police are injured and the city is burned and, you know, priceless artifacts are thrown into the river, it's all passive voice. It's all the police got themselves injured at this lovely and mostly peaceful anti-racism protest. When it's Henry Nowak, it's police pelted with missiles at Henry Nowak protest. Not White Lives Matter protest, not, you know, during vigil for murdered white guy. But that's just, you know, one little sample of the way that the media is covering this. And that, in a way, encapsulates the two-tier society that they have. I mean, forget two-tier policing. It's a two-tier society. There's not a single person in Britain. This is from Sam CKX on X. He says, there's not a single person in Britain who doesn't agree that the death of Henry Nowak was a tragedy. And the way the police handled it was absolutely disgraceful. There's only one political party, however, that wants to take that family's pain and politicize it to their own benefit. So what does this even mean? What you're saying is everyone in Britain recognizes and is horrified at the death of Henry Nowak, but there's only one political party that actually wants to take proactive steps to prevent it from happening again, and that makes them the bad guys. Everybody sees the danger. Everybody sees how bad things are. Everybody's outraged and horrified at what happened, but you're a bad person if you try to change things to guarantee it doesn't happen into the future. Madness, pure, unrelenting madness, obviously. Please recall that UK authorities, by the way, have a dedicated unit called RICU whose sole occupation is intimidating the families of politically sensitive murder victims to shut up and put out pre-written stuff like the script that was read by Henry Nowak's parents. And we talked about this yesterday. I talked about the Office of Community Relations here in the United States, which does the same thing. And I said, obviously, they have something similar. They have an equivalent in the UK where they go in any case of racial sensitivity. They go and pressure the parents to read the script, basically calling for calm. So then they can then turn around and say, you're the bad one. You're now hurting the parents by opposing the thing that killed their son. Kind of ridiculous, if you ask me. That tweet I just read was from was a response to Dan Hodges saying, number of people asked me to comment on the Henry Nowak case. His father said, we do not want his death to be used to create further division, hatred, or tension. if you can't respect his wishes, you're scum. That's what I think. But again, it is literally a word-for-word verbatim script that they read. I mean, it's like perform, you know, it's a form they fill out. It's a template that they apply. It's not sincere. It's something that they're pressured to do by the government, who then turns around and uses it as an excuse to silence people. Now, when it comes to the question of, so RICU, this office, it's the equivalent of our Office of Community Relations, was covered in The Guardian in 2016. The Guardian unraveled the secretive workings behind a campaign to stop UK Muslims from falling prey to the Islamic State. The shadowy Whitehall unit, the heart of the British government's covert strategic communications campaign, was inspired by clandestine Cold War propaganda program. While the Cold War offensive targeted communism, trade unionists, and newspapers in developing countries, the current operations are aimed at Muslims both in Britain and the Middle East. The British-based element of the campaign and part of the Prevent Counter-Radicalization program and run by the Home Office Research Information and Communications Unit, or RICU, R-I-C-U, RICU officials, dislike the word propaganda. They prefer the term strategic communications. The extraordinary ambitions of these communications are set out in RICU documents seen by The Guardian. Strategic communication aims at effect behavioral and attitudinal change, says one paper. For almost 2 years, RICU's focus has been on Islamic State, whose own online propaganda has proven powerful. ISIS is calculated to be posting an average of 18 messages a day, many of them showing not violence but flowers, forests, and flowing streams to emphasize the natural beauty of the territory under its control. But yeah, essentially, you can look into it yourself. This is the office that is the propaganda office of the UK, and one of the things that they engage in is approaching people who are victims of crimes and get them to play down or discredit the racial aspects of those crimes only and exclusively when it's white people that are the victims. When it comes to the claims that the police are racist or that there's two-tier policing, a claim that Keir Starmer just outright rejected in no uncertain terms, are, of course, absolutely real and written down in the training manuals and handbooks and information the police receive. And, of course, the comments from the police are constantly reinforcing this idea. When you read the College of Policing guidance from March 25th this year, it boils down to everything is racial. We must fix the country by treating people differently, although, of course, we'll never end racism, which is our original sin. This garbage should never have gotten beyond the world of deranged academic theory. It's now undeniably a blueprint for getting white people killed. So it's anti-racist commitment. The Police Service of England and Wales is committed to anti-racism and racial equity. Anti-racism and racial equity. Our commitment to anti-racism means we're taking a stand against racism in all its forms. I mean, you know this language. We've heard it 10 billion times before. It's not exactly a surprise. We also have a story from The Times UK. Officers from force behind NOAC arrests pressured by diversity course. A staff survey found 1 in 7 of the officers in the area around where Henry Novak lived, 1 in 7 of them felt controlled and pressured to adopt certain ideas in the sessions run for Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary. A number of officers in the force responsible for the arrest of Henry Novak felt controlled and pressured to feel certain ways after receiving mandatory diversity training, a survey has revealed. The course is taught in Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary officers and staff about racism, unconscious bias, privilege, and the importance of being an ally. The staff survey found 1 in 7 officers and staff, 15%, had felt controlled and pressured to adopt certain ideas in the sessions, and the same number thought mistakes could have been held against me. A fifth feared being rejected for saying the wrong thing. The revelations are likely to provoke fresh questions about the role of equality and diversity guidelines in the actions of police officers, after video that showed officers in the same force handcuffing Novak, 18, for alleged racial abuse while he lay dying from stab wounds. And so it's not a question. It's not a debate as to whether the training is going on, whether it's having an effect. Like, it absolutely is, and this is one of the negative consequences of it, which, like so many things over the last several years, is political. The attack is political. The attack was a racist attack against a white kid, almost certainly motivated by the constant stream of anti-white incitement that you get on the media. The person who stabbed him is an immigrant, and of course, immigration into UK is the number one political topic discussed there. You also have the fact that the people who did it, the murderer himself, the knife man, knew that he could call the kid racist in order to get away with his crime, or at least he thought he could. This is a political attack. This was a political attack. This attack only occurred because of the political situation in the UK right now. So you're not politicizing anything. You are appropriately addressing the underlying cause of the attack. Meanwhile, to politicize something is to take something that is totally apolitical and then couch it as if it's political, which, of course, Keir Starmer was engaged in to the maximum degree when it came to things like the attack on the Jewish people in Golders Green, which was not an anti-Semitic attack in any way. The guy stabbed a Muslim first, and then he stabbed two other random people. And then Keir Starmer gave speech after speech after speech about how the British government had an undying loyalty to the Jewish people and how they had to do everything they possibly could to provide them everything they could possibly need to keep themselves safe, an outpouring of concern politicizing an attack that was literally just an insane person stabbing random people with no concern as to who they were. That's politicizing an attack. To address the political causes to an attack is not politicizing anything. It is political. Just like when illegal immigrants get attack people here in America, that's a political situation because it is the outcome of political decisions that were made. Henry Novak's case is, in fact, the same. Matthew Stalden on X says, Farage, of course, has form. He did it after the Southport murders. He's doing it again after the murder of Henry Novak. He looks to divide and destroy rather than unite and build. Carl Wilkinson responds to this with, I think, the key phrase we all need to understand and start adopting and utilizing. He says, we have reached Soviet levels of gaslighting. A man is murdered. And yet somehow the real problem is that people are angry about it. Children are gang raped. And somehow the real problem is that people keep mentioning it and dividing communities. This is moral inversion. That's the phrase. That's the word. That's what's happening constantly to us all of the time. The person that's dividing the community is the murderer, not the people responding to the murderer. People dividing the community are the people telling you you have to accept the murder because otherwise you're making people feel unwelcome. You people are the bad ones. You people are the ones causing the problems. It's moral inversion to then blame the victims for the chaos that you've created. He says crime divides community, institutional failure divides communities, cover-ups, euphemisms, cowardice, and elite contempt divide communities. This is community coming together to beat up the cops. It's a beautiful thing, actually. And so when we get back, we're going to go, we're going to talk to Jack Hadfield, who was there on the ground, and you'll see his watermark there on a lot of the videos that we've been showing and that you're seeing all over the internet. So we're going to talk to him and, you know, get the on the ground first person view. But we're going to stick to this topic because I'm going to go through later in the show the comparison between an attack that occurred about 2 months ago and this one. And it's not just obvious, you know, the difference between the reactions. It's infuriating and offensive and enlightening as to who's really pulling the strings behind the scenes. We'll be back on the other side with Jack Hadfield. Please share this link. Share it at AJN Live on X. I'm at Harrison H. Smith on X, AlexJonesLive.com. Of course, we're on Rumble, rumble.com/TheWarRoomLive. That's rumble.com/TheWarRoomLive. Share those links right now. We'll be back with Jack Hadfield on the other side. Stay with us.
So it's real simple. If you want to keep this broadcast on the air, if you want to see us hire more hosts, more reporters, and expand, go to thealexjonesstore.com and get the very best supplements, wide selection of Patriot apparel, and so much cool stuff. The problem is the really cool products they get, like the Faraday bags and the wallets and the knives. It's all great. They sell out so quick and they can't get the supply of them. But I want to thank you all for your support. So they give away an amazing American super vehicle, usually an off-road truck or SUV or sports car, every month. But every month of the last week, there is a special time where every purchase you get gets put into the sweepstakes 100 times, every dollar you spend. And most winners do it during this last week. And then you get $10,000 per vehicle when you win it. Nobody's ever won two vehicles at once. It's over 12 vehicles that have been away now, or 14 vehicles. So this week until Friday at midnight, it's by law, it's all sweepstakes company. every order you make, every dollar you spend at theofficestore.com, you put in 100X to win the souped-up custom H1 Hummer and the 2026 Dodge Charger Scat Pack, plus $20,000 cash, or $10,000 each if you just won one vehicle. I can't wait till somebody wins both. Every dollar spent, 100X entries at thealexjonesstore.com. And that's a bigly thing that, you know, they're our sponsor, main funder. I was never really a sweepstakes guy, but now I like it because listeners love it. And, you know, we fly the winners in. We're building a bigger studio. As soon as that's done, we'll have winners in again. So take action on that right now at thealexjonesstore.com. But let me just say this again. All I want to do is steer you right. I would not sell you something that doesn't work, because I want you to like me in the show, and I also want you to want to get it again. I use the analogy all the time. If I owned a restaurant, it would have real quality, delicious, wide selection, great atmosphere, great service, reasonable price. I want to have the restaurant that has lines around the block every time. I don't want to, you know, you don't need Google to know who's got a good restaurant when you're even some small town middle of nowhere. I'll be driving along with family. Hey, let's search reviews. This town coming up. I go, I'm not looking at a review. Human intelligence. I'm going to pull into town and I'll drive through the town and say, okay, that place has 5 cars at it. That has 20. That has a line out the door. If I'm not in a big hurry, I'd rather go to the one with the line out the door. If I'm in a hurry, let's go to the one that's full at least. And then I get this incredible meal. You can buy fake Google reviews. I don't go off that. I go off the reality. And if you don't get our ultramethylene blue or ultramethylene red or Irish CMOS or Shilajit or bovine colostrum or our T3 iodine is the best, you are insane. You're not just getting the very best products that'll blow you away. You're funding an organization proven to piss off tyrants and change the world for the better. Take action now at thealexjonesstore.com. There's a big mega sale one day going right now. 40% off methylene red, atomic defense moon booster, methylene blue tincture, methylene blue gummies, MK Ultra brain booster, Warcry smelling salts, 35% off zeolite detox, spike protein, heavy metal detox, zeolite tincture, creatine powder, the very best, CMOS capsules, methylene blue caps, up to 30% off iodine tincture, CMOS gummies, Shilajit caps and gummies, ultimate chill and energy, and so much more. And that funds the second American revolution worldwide. So you have until Friday at midnight central to get in to win either or both of the vehicles, 100 times entries, but that's just a fun thing you do. You're missing out if you don't get the incredible products. And by the way, I was like, what are smelling salts for? I was ignorant. They're like, oh, they're a best seller, sir. We're selling. It's a big seller now. Because I guess if you're going to lift weights or you want to wake up without coffee, just smell this. My God, you're awake. You're a truck driver or whatever, you know, don't have to drink too much coffee or whatever, just get this. Warcry smelling salts. It's all there at thealexjonesstore.com.
Welcome back. We are connecting right now with Jack Hadfield. He was on the ground at the protest in the UK over the death of Henry Novak yesterday. We're going to get his on-the-ground first-person view of what occurred there and what he saw and how he thinks it'll go this time around, as it is just the latest in a series of protests against the immigration and the horrifying consequences to the people of the UK. As we bring him in, I do want to ask you to go to thealexjonesstore.com. Thealexjonesstore.com is the only way that you can really support, since the only way that we really get support. If you like what we do here, if you think it's valuable to have an outlet like this in existence, it's entirely up to you whether you go to thealexjonesstore.com or not. You don't go, we go away. You go there, we stay around to be a pain in the butt for the globalists and to tell the truth about things despite all of the lies swirling around. Go to thealexjonesstore.com, get yourself some ultramethylene red, ultramethylene blue, Irish CMOS, Shilajit gummies. They're all incredible. They're all extremely low price, and they all directly support the Alex Jones Network, Alex Jones Live, The War Room, and our launch and evolution into the future as we grow and evolve. With that, I'm very happy to welcome my guest, Jack Hadfield. He can be found on X at Jack Hatters. And Jack, once again, we have you to thank for some of the incredible footage that came out from the riots yesterday. Glad to see you're okay. Just How was it? Well, what was the experience like?
Yeah, so what happened yesterday was really we ended up with two different protests. The main protest started outside the Southampton Central Police Station at 6 p.m. I mean, I got there at 5, you know, an hour before, and there are already, you know, hundreds of people gathering. I would have said around 3,000 to 4,000 people, I reckon, turn up to this protest. And this was, one where you had multiple people speaking. Tommy Robinson, obviously Nick Tenconi from UKIP, Kelly J. Keane from Let Women Speak, and Richard Inman, who's an anti-jihadist activist. And there was this already sort of bubbling, simmering anger. But as Nigel Farage said, it was cold, pure rage. There wasn't any anything going back and forth with the police, but there were chants of, you know, scum towards the police, saying that people should be ashamed of themselves for wearing the uniform when they can sort of complicit in the system that led to the death of Henry Novak. And quite frankly, what was most interesting about this is that there were chants of "I can't breathe," which is Henry Novak's last words. Of course, extremely evocative of George Floyd. They would chant that then, and also "racist police off our streets," another slogan you expect to hear at leftist protests. So that was all, you know, pretty peaceful, but there was obviously anger within the crowd. After that protest finished, a good chunk of the protesters then marched around 1.5-2 miles north up to Portswood Police Station, which was just around the corner from where the killing actually took place. And so there was a protest there of, again, a fewer number of people, because obviously a lot of them split off as the march went north through the town. I mean, it was about a 30 to 45 minute walk uphill, so not something to be sniffed at necessarily. And at that point, that's when the police line started forming. People started to be thinking about kettles. There was starting to bottles being thrown, and then, because literally the road where it happened was literally just around the corner from this second police station, that's the point where you've seen the footage of the bins being thrown, the riot police engaging, and at that point the riot police then moving further back down the road to get to the original police lines. And then that's where later in the evening you had the further clashes with the protesters. But this was then really the people who engaged in the violence was a fraction already of a fraction of the initial protest. And I think it's right to actually declare that this was a mostly peaceful protest, if you're basing it by the numbers of the people who turned out at 6 p.m. And of course, this is the phrase that the establishment used when talking about the George Floyd riots in 2020, which was actually burning things down. People were killed as a result of this, police and civilians. But this, of course, is now being portrayed just like Southport, just like the Asylum Hotel protest that I've covered just last year. It's being portrayed, as you would expect, far-right, violent thugs. The politicians are, of course, condemning this rather than focusing on condemning the anti-white hatred of the police that, again, led to certainly, if not the death directly consequentially, the terrible mistreatment at the end of Henry's life.
Yeah, and of course, we've seen this over and over, as you point out. I mean, the Southport riots, the Asylum Hotel riots that you covered and came on with us at that time. To me, this feels a little bit different, and maybe I'm just seeing this myself, but it coinciding with the rise of Rupert Lowe and Restore Britain and the, you know, expose about the grooming gangs that's coming along, Nigel Farage taking a very strong stance against this, talking about the cold rage it inspires. It seems like at least at the political level, this is being treated differently. Do you think that's true, or am I seeing things here?
Yeah, definitely at the political level. And in terms of the sort of level of violence that you saw there, I think it's fair to say it was certainly less than Southport. Southport, I've described as sort of hot rage. It's fire, and it only burned for, you know, 6 days straight across the country. And then, of course, Starmer came in and arrested everybody.
Right.
And last year, the Asylum Hotel protests were very, very peaceful. There was a couple clashes with the police here and there. But actually, this yesterday evening, there was, you know, once they got to the police station, there was sort of a continued amount of time of around 2.5 hours where They would clash with the police. They would stop. The police would move back. They would move back and forth. And it was a sustained level of at least 2 hours of serious disorder going up and down and back and forth of the levels of it. And then it sort of dispersed at the end of the evening. So it was not to the level of Southport where the police vans were burning and bricks being thrown at mosques. But it was also more than what we saw at the Asylum Hotel protest. You could possibly argue that this is because of the cause. Obviously, Southport, three little girls murdered, you know, by a black guy for seemingly no reason other than that he just hated white people. The Asylum Hotel protests, obviously, then based on sexual assaults and rapes. And again, then this was a murder of a young white man. So maybe you can say on the kind of the outrage scale, perhaps that was sort of in the middle of those two in terms of pulling at the heartstrings of people. But it definitely has changed, I think. You can tell the reaction that's had in the political scene, especially from Reform. I think that's kind of the difference here, in that Restore have been focusing on the arguing to bring back the death penalty and banning the kirpan. Now, the latter of which Reform has also posited, but Reform are primarily going after the police and the anti-racism, which is within the police, which, of course, these anti-racist programs are, of course, actually anti-white. And, you know, Nigel has said, white lives matter too, which, of course, is crazy to imagine that someone who's, frankly, potentially the next future prime minister of this country coming out with. If you said to somebody that in 2020, you know, I don't think they would have believed your ears.
Right. Right. Well, and that is a difference here, right, is that at Southport, as brutal and horrific as it was, it didn't have that element of the police being complicit. In some way, you could say the immigration, you know, system is complicit. Maybe you could say overall the system is complicit because of how it handles violent crime, especially from minority groups. But in this case, you have the racism of the police in, you know, many people's eyes contributing directly to the death. So do you think that is why this has taken on such a you know, more political character, because the government in a lot of ways is directly implicated here where they weren't in other cases?
Yeah, so actually, I would slightly disagree with you there, but you're basically on the right track. You know, what we've seen before when it comes to how the police deal with minorities. Now, the Hampshire Police and the National Police had a race action plan, which was brought in place after George Floyd, where they deliberately treat minorities better than they would treat white people, specifically not race blind. You know, and of course, if there's accusations of racism, they have to take this seriously. Now, the police have had sort of these anti-racist policies, you know, since 1998, after the McPherson report following the death of Stephen Lawrence, who was a black man who was killed by a few white people in London, and other racist reports. But so if you look at what's happened previously, it's all been about reducing sort of the impact it has on minority people. Mm. So if you look at what happened at Southport, I think the police were complicit, but in a negative light, in that PREVENT, which is the counter-terrorism, counter-extremism part of the police, this program, Axel Rudi-Cabana was basically sort of taken off of it, or they didn't care about him that much because he was a young black kid. If you look at the Pakistani rape gangs, you know, the police didn't investigate this because they didn't want to be called racist. The Manchester Arena bomber, you know, people didn't want to look into him because he was Muslim. So all of these things where the police were complicit in basically either in letting crimes happen, that sort of letting crimes happen, letting minorities get away with it. Whereas what we've seen now is the exact opposite point of that case, in that the police have actively gone after a white person, assumed the white person is the aggressor, treated him as such, and therefore the last words that he heard as was bleeding out of the ground, where he being read his rights, and when saying he was stabbed, the police officer said, "I don't think you have been, mate." So that is the difference now, what we've seen, the impacts of the anti-racist and therefore anti-white policies of the police, and that's why it's crystallized in such a fashion.
And I'm just thinking about it in comparison to Southport, and again, I don't know if I'm just imagining things, but it does seem to me that with Nigel Farage saying white lives matter, and it seems like Southport didn't have sort of the popular support that this one has. Again, am I seeing that? Do you think that's accurate just from your discussions of people around you? I mean, it seemed like a lot of people in the UK that I saw during the Southport riots were sort of ready to write them off as hooligans and extremists. They don't represent us. You know, we'll handle it a better way. Whereas I don't see a lot of that this time. I see a lot of like no, the police are wrong here and there needs to be serious change. I mean, it feels like this could be the catalyst for a much larger, you know, comprehensive change of the way things happen in the UK. Again, am I seeing things? Is it too early to tell? What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think you're right, but I think this probably wouldn't have happened without Southport. I think if you didn't have that initial spark of massive violence, we wouldn't have had the protest last year. We wouldn't have had this protest. You know, the fact that these now spontaneous right-wing protests have sort of cropped up, which have been organized by local people rather than, more right-wing activist groups like the EDL or Britain First in the past. I wrote a piece on for Pimlico Journal a couple of months ago on the changing face of right-wing protest. Well worth looking up if you want to do a deep dive on how that has shifted in Britain over recent years. But I think importantly with this, I think you're right in that it will make a change. Again, reform, which obviously they're leading in the polls now, if they're going to be the next government, they've already claimed, you know, not just to have this kirpan ban, which of course is the supposedly religious weapon that the Sikhs use, and obviously that was used in this instance to murder Henry Novak. They have put forward an Equal Treatment Act in that they'll completely remove all of this anti-racist things from the police, DEI training, all of this, and I think reform would have looked into doing, looking into all of this DI stuff within the police, but they wouldn't necessarily have gone so hard and so fast now, you know, if there wasn't this spurring on incident.
Yeah, and again, the two-tier policing has become, you know, an obvious catchphrase that's very accurate. I was reading this today, the moral inversion that's going on. I think that's such a great phrase for what's happening, where your son gets attacked, but you're the bad guy for, you know, complaining about it. Your community gets disrupted, but you're the one causing division if you speak out against it. And it seems like that's not, again, as effective this time. It seems like people are going, no, they have a right to be mad. They're right to be angry. They're right to be outraged by this. And again, the inconsistency between the way the George Floyd rioters were treated. And we got some videos. Let's go to clip 49 here. This was during the Hare Halls riots in Leeds. So this was in 2022, so not even as far back as George Floyd, but a good comparison as to, you know, when the Muslim community is rioting, here's what it looks like. Let's go to clip 49. So here you see, Muslim rioters, no police sign, no police line to be seen, no riot shields. They actually are there, but they're way off in the distance. There they are, way, way over there, letting the people burn cars, letting the people destroy things, and giving them plenty of room and backing up when they approach. So again, the aggressiveness that we saw yesterday, totally absent when it's the Hare Halls, Hare Hills, I'm sure I pronounce it, but these were the Muslim riots back in 2022. We can go to clip 47 here. This was the Black Lives Matter riots in the UK, where the leftists tore down a statue, I believe this is Winston Churchill, and, you know, poured it, you know, threw it into the river. Let's watch clip 47 here. So again, you can see, you know, this is what was going on during Black Lives Matter. And at that time, Keir Starmer was taking a knee. I'm talking about how important it was these riots be allowed to continue. So again, the moral inversion, the inconsistency, the inequality. I guess that's not Churchill. That was that other guy who I guess they said had slaves or something. But who cares, right? Just destroy the, public art, and no one's going to stop you. No police to be seen. And they can take their time with it. Takes them a while, but nobody's bothering them, so they can do it. So again, just I don't understand how the UK public has been blind to this up to this point, but I don't know how you move forward not recognizing the shocking inconsistencies with the way law is applied there in the UK.
Yeah, I mean, just a quick correction on there. The Hare Hills riots actually took place in 2024, just 2 weeks before Southport. So that's what made the reaction to Southport even more astounding, because only, you know, just as Keir Starmer came in and started arresting everyone who'd been to any right-wing protest who might have just said something silly on social media, it was only 2 weeks before that Muslims were rioting in the streets and the police weren't there. But I think it really was, you know, Southport. I think it probably is quite a big turning point in how people understood politics and reacted to politics, and certainly looked into how the establishment behaves and treats people. It, like, it was two-tier care. Don't forget, it was only a month after he was elected prime minister, which was on
ironically, on your guys' Independence Day in 2024, where he then immediately, you know, just a month, less than a month into the tenure, started locking everybody up just for daring to come out in the streets. Of course, there was some actual violence, people who probably should actually have been arrested, but lots of people who, frankly, wouldn't even have come close to that threshold. So I think since then, you know, that's why one reason why Keir Starmer has become so unpopular, because he has become the figurehead of this two-tier treatment. And frankly, you know, having two-tier care, having that as a name is quite portentous. If you're going to be known for this double standard, you know, that rhyming doesn't help at all.
Right. Well, and so I guess my concern is, like, how is this going to be different than Southport? Because Southport was so crazy. It was so, like, massive. And I remember at the time going, look, either this snowball keeps rolling downhill, it keeps growing, and there's going to be real systemic change that's going to come from this, or they're going to crack down and they're going to throw everybody involved in prison. And it turned out that's what happened. And of course, we've gone over and over and over, but if people don't remember, I mean, they were emptying out the jails of murderers to make room for the people they were sending to jail for posts on Facebook. And they were setting up 24-hour expedited court processes so they could jail the maximum number of people. I mean, they went insane. Is this going to be the same? Are all these, you know, young men who are caught up in the violence, are they just going to be systematically rounded up? I mean, how is this going to be different than Southport? What outcome could emerge from this that wouldn't lead to just another round of crackdowns?
Yeah, so I think you sort of, rather than looking at all of these individually, you do have to sort of think of Southport as the start, and Southport has yet to end. Southport, I think, and then the riots over there set the stage for then the much wider peaceful demonstration of last year, and then the, you know, what we're probably going to see more of this summer, slightly heightened, you know, that cold rage rather than the hot rage. And, you know, people are being, of course, very more careful what they post on social media. They're being, you know, slightly less obvious with the police on that, masking up, for example, to protect that. I think, you know, Southport set off this chain of events where now you have, again, in Nigel Farage, you know, who hopefully, touch wood, will win the next general election. These riots and these protests, these people coming out in the street and making their voices heard is directly then influencing, hopefully, the next government of the country in how they will act. So that's how you sort of have to look on the much wider timescale. Southport, obviously, at the time looked like it was just a disaster, but it set up the way that we're dealing with politics now. I still think if we hadn't had those riots, there would have been some political change, but certainly you would have not seen at all the level of this pure street protest, political engagement in a different way outside the ballot box than you have now.
So what do you think would be, I mean, what could the government do now to sort of show that it's taking these complaints seriously? Like if the riots continue, if you were the spokesperson for the rioters and they said, you know, here's the list of demands that we want. I mean, what are those demands? What would you want the government to be doing?
Well, I mean, immediately you just have to admit the fact that two-tier policing exists, the fact that anti-racist things within the police are anti-white. They disproportionately affect the native people in this country, and deliberately so. And you have to admit that the system is set up in that way. But the Labour government just yesterday and in Prime Minister's questions today with Keir Starmer, they completely denied that this was happening. If I were Labour right now, I would be saying, like, yeah, anti-white racism is just as bad as racism against black people, Sikhs, Muslims, whatever, and clearly this is an issue that we need to fix. I mean, Jack Straw, who was a former Labour Home Secretary, who had the McPherson Report in 1998, who sort of had the phrase of institutional racism, even he just said either today or yesterday that, oh, actually, this has probably gone a bit too far. So if you're having these former Labour politicians who are admitting this, I think it's frankly a big open goal for the government to not be addressing it in the way that these other people are.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, just the idea that they would reject these claims is so absurd. We literally have the police's own training manual stuff, and it says, I'll read it, quote, producing equality of policing outcomes for people from different ethnic groups by responding to individuals and communities according to their specific needs, circumstances, and experiences, with understanding these will be racialized and with the aim of reducing harm. It does not mean treating everybody the same or being colorblind, parentheses, racial equality. So, I mean, they literally say it's not about being colorblind. It is literally about having two tiers based on race. So the idea that they would reject that is outrageous, because it's literally in the literature. But do the people of Britain know this? I mean, we're getting maybe a distorted view looking at X and being in America. Are the people of Britain aware of all of this going on? I had another picture of a guy who took a picture of the magazine newspaper stand in the UK today. Not a single headline about Henry Novak, not a single headline about the protest. Do the people of UK even know this is going on?
I'd be surprised about that. I did see a bunch of the papers this morning when I was just on GB News, and they're all talking about Henry Novak.
Are? Okay.
So,
well, good.
I wasn't sure about that, but this is the only news in the country right now, and even sort of more establishment outlets of sort of writing, like Times Radio, for example, had a colleague of mine on, David Shipley, to talk about, you know, this anti-white racism within the police. You can tell, certainly there's no one who is condemning, who is saying the actions of the police were good. They're all saying it was bad. And, you know, it's just the levels, people are just disagreeing on the levels of where there is this institutional issue, perhaps. I think certainly if you talk to most people, I would say that, you know, everyone agreed this is a terrible, terrible thing to have happened, and that the police were at the very least partly to blame. And this is, frankly, I don't think anyone, even on the left, are going to counteract the narrative that the police did the right thing. Nobody is admitting that. They're just saying, what level of blame are we dealing with here? So if you're already coping that far back, then, you know, you can see how the narrative is already being lost for them.
Yeah, it is. And I think it was Carl Benjamin that pointed out today, you know, they're now the left is now using the phrase, well, all lives matter. And he points out that's an inherently defensive claim, which really shows that sort of the tidal shift has occurred, and sort of the impetus is with the native Britons who just want, you know, their country back. And that's a really beautiful thing. We are so lucky to have somebody like you on the ground capturing this footage. I mean, so many of the videos that we played yesterday had your watermark on them. How can people find you? How can they support you in your all important work, sir?
Yeah, you can find me primarily on X. That's at Jack Hadders. All of my other links are available, jackhadfield.co.uk. I think you also go to buymeacoffee.com/Jack Hadfield if you want to send me a tip or anything. Buymeacoffee.com/Jack Hadders. I forgot my own donation link. It's been a while, but it's in my bio on X.
Bio on X. So there you go. At Jack Hadders, HADDERS. Again, just incredible work. You know, we wouldn't know what was really going on if we didn't have people like Jack Hadfield here on the ground getting the footage for us. So do go support him. Buy him a coffee. He needs one with all the work he's doing. Thank you so much for being with us, sir.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, we'll be right back with the second hour. Don't go anywhere, folks.
Then at midnight, Alex Jones was thrown out and locked out of his InfoWars studio along with his crew after the 8-year-long legal battle trying to shut him down and censor him is coming to a close. And liberal media are celebrating with headlines like this. The lights go out at Alex Jones InfoWars. And InfoWars.com, the domain name, now has a message that just says off air. But these people don't know anything about Alex Jones, because if you just go to alexjoneslive.com, the website looks very similar to the old InfoWars website. And look at there! There is a live feed of his show, the Alex Jones Show, now just not using the InfoWars name, where he is continuing and hasn't missed a beat. If you go to the Apple App Store and the Android App Store and search for AJN Live, you can download the new Alex Jones Live app, where you can still listen to his show streamed live on your phone. Or you can just find and follow Alex Jones on Twitter, X, where he still has 4.5 million followers, because despite the lawyer's attempts to try to take his personal account, they failed. And you can see there the live icon around his profile photo shows that he is live streaming the show there on repeat 24/7.
There is a war raging for the future of humanity. We have opened a new front at alexjoneslive.com. They thought they could silence us. They thought they could drive us off the air. They failed. We are back, stronger, louder, unbroken. Find the feeds. Hear the broadcast. Share the signal. AlexJonesLive.com. The coordinates of freedom.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.